The Moscow Music Peace Festival was a two-day rock concert held in August 1989. Held during Mikhail Gorbachev's period of glasnost, Russia allowed a handful of Western rock and roll acts to perform for the first time in Moscow. And over 100,000 people living in the Cold War Soviet Union packed into Central Lenin Station to witness the forbidden fruit of late 80s rock and roll in all of its excess. Motley Crue, Ozzy Osbourne, Skid Row, Bon Jovi, and the Scorpions shared the stage with Russian rock and roll acts to promote peace and raise awareness about drug and alcohol addiction. Because Ozzy Osbourne and Motley Crue are just the people you want promoting the virtues of sobriety. But the Moscow Music Peace Festival was also an important cultural moment near the end of the Cold War. By the end of the show, stoic Soviet soldiers who were there to provide security were throwing their hats in the air and rocking out to the music. The event also inspired the Scorpions to write their hit song Wind of Change, which became an anthem for the end of the Cold War as the Berlin Wall came down just a few months later. So tune in for this episode of Prisoners of Rock and Roll as we take a peek behind the Iron Curtain for a look at the Moscow Music Peace Festival. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Prisoners of Rock and Roll, episode number 82. My name is Bruce Kramer, and I'm just one half of the team hopefully bringing you some education and entertainment in this episode, because I'm here with my co-host and my friend. You know him, you love him, the timekeeper, the bartender, Mr. Ryan McCusker.
Are you rocking?
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by Boldfoot Socks, as well as McCusker's Tavern in Philadelphia, and our show is proudly part of the family at the Pantheon Podcast Network. What's going on, brother?
One day at a time, one day at a time, man. That's all you can do, right?
True that, man. McCusker's was jumping last week at WrestleMania.
Oh, dude. Meanie Mania was a total success. It was kick-ass. Oh, so many people. It was all on the sidewalk. People, it was amazing.
I saw the pictures of some of the wrestlers who showed up. Sure. And the coolest friggin' thing, man, was that the Blue Meanie got married in McCusker's. Dude, by surprise. That so cool.
That was a first for 17th and Shunk. Absolutely. The blue guy getting married
in McCusker's.
That's probably will never happen again either.
That was awesome. And I was so happy for him and Mrs. Meanie. They're just both really good people. And it's perfect that they did it there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it was a great success. Brian had so many fans there, so many people supporting him. It was just a great night.
Awesome.
And WrestleMania, we packed them in all weekend. People that couldn't make it out for the Meanie party, yeah, they showed up the rest of the weekend for WrestleMania.
That's awesome, man. I'm glad to hear that. Very cool. I saw the warden was there Friday night. He stopped in with some friends of ours that were in town for WrestleMania. He took him down. He wasn't getting there till late. I couldn't get down there because I'm kind of a house cat these days and couldn't make the hour drive down there. But hopefully some people got the warden's autograph if they didn't get the Meanie's autograph. And it sounds like it was an all around great weekend.
I hear those 8x10s are coming out of the warden.
Yeah, man, I sent you. We got some listener feedback about that. Someone wrote us in asking about those. I'll get to it later. And I sent you a picture of the one, the prototype I have. That I have that in a Sharpie marker in my bag, so we'll get the warden to sign them. So, and I saw the warden on Easter Sunday. I went to the Phillies game with him and some friends, and I was telling him about it. He's all about it. So he's excited. Yeah. No, awesome. The Moscow Music Peace Festival, man. Shame on me. I had no idea what this was. I don't remember this at all.
this was such a big deal to me in 1989, man. As a young kid, yeah, all my favorite bands were involved in this concert. And for them to play like such a far away distance where nobody gets to play, I think it was a big honor for them.
I read a lot about it, and I'm probably going to play the nerd angle tonight. And then you've just got like, you just got stories about watching it and seeing it and living it. And
I remember, in South Philadelphia, certain sections had cable TV. We had cable TV and had to access the pay-per-view. Well, the Moscow Music Peace Festival was on pay-per-view, but of course my dad wouldn't let us get it. But you know, like you would put it on and you can like see it in between the lines, like you do the old porno station.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So we would just like listen to it instead of like seeing it. It was awesome. It was a good memory of mine.
Well, that makes it extra cool too, that it's kind of, you know, like it's a little dangerous and it's not something like your parents didn't let you do and you figured out a way. And I'm not surprised at all that you figured out a way, much like, you know, I wake up Sunday morning and I'm looking through my Facebook and I see a picture of you at WrestleMania over the weekend. And I was like, of course you're there.
Dude, Ryan McCusker goes everywhere.
That's true.
If there's something going on, I'm a couple blocks away from my bar, I'm going to be there.
You're going to figure a way out. So let me, so let's set the stage a little bit, man. So this is like, this whole story of how this happened is like crazy, but maybe let's set a stage a little bit about like the concert, and then I can back up a little bit and talk about the absolute bizarre story of how this happened. But so it's like 1989, and I guess, man, like just setting the stage a little bit, dude, for like, you know, like what's going on in that part of the world at the time, you know, like the Berlin Wall is like, it's still there, right? It's like, I was driving to work this morning thinking about that, like how crazy that had to have been to live in like Berlin then, right? Like it'd be like if, you know, at one point, like when I lived in the northeast section of Philadelphia and you lived in South Philly, there was like a wall block and we weren't able to see each other or hang out. It's just crazy.
That's insane. Right? One day you could, the next day you couldn't.
Right. And it, you know, coming down in 1989, like it wasn't that long ago, you know, like we were in school when this happened. Like I totally remember this happened, the Berlin Wall coming down.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. And, probably one of the biggest things, you know,
I agree.
Our childhood. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, our parents grew up hearing about, you know, we're going to get nuked by the Russians and, you know, the Soviet Union and just, you know, the Cold War and all this other, you know, not to get all into politics and everything, but also thinking too, man, about like if you lived in like East Berlin or if you lived in Moscow and if you're like a rock and roll fan, like, it's pretty barren, right? We talked about this too, where like Spotify isn't in like Russia and everything right now because of the war with Ukraine and everything. It's like if you're just some 16-year-old kid and you just want to listen to rock and roll music, you can't do it. And
it was like that, you know, back during the Cold War, you know, people were selling bootlegs of Beatle albums.
Yes.
You know,
said there was only one record store in Moscow. And a lot of it was like you had to go in with a blank cassette tape because they didn't sell the records. They would like, oh, OK, you want the Beatles? Well, we'll tape the tape. We'll dub it for you and you'll take it home. And the quality would just get crappier and crappier.
Yeah.
And it was like rock and roll just wasn't. Yeah, you know, there's a couple rock and roll bands that play in this that are Russian, but largely, you know, like American rock and roll or British rock and roll wasn't there. Like these acts weren't there. Billy Joel played Moscow in like 87. So there's like a little bit of stuff, but nothing like, you know, there's a pretty big gap between Billy Joel and Ozzy and what happens at this.
And not for nothing, they're playing Lenin Stadium.
Yes. You know. Which is like the biggest stadium in Russia. It was the home for like the 80 Olympics, you know, big deal. It holds like, you know, 100,000 people go to this concert over the 2 days. And then it was like, it was broadcast in like 60 countries around the world on pay-per-view, like you were saying. The story behind how this happened, man. So he said it was like, it's supposed to be a peace festival to bring awareness to drug and alcohol abuse. And you'd be like, what the hell are Ozzy and Motley and all these guys playing for this? So it all comes down to their manager. Doc McGee, who
shitbag of the week.
Oh yeah, dude. Here,
shitbag of the week.
Dun dun dun.
Oh, so I've been waiting my whole life to get Doc McGee to shitbag of the week. He's like the Colonel Parker.
Where do you start? So Doc McGee managed a lot of these bands. He was managing Motley Crue. And
was it Motley Crue, Bon Jovi, Cinderella?
Skid Row.
Yeah.
I had like a list of acts that he managed over his career. And it was like Motley Crue, Bon Jovi, Guns N' Roses, Kiss, Skid Row, Night Ranger, Down, Ted Nugent, and Hootie and the Blowfish. I don't know what that's about, but he did.
He made some bands the biggest bands in the world. I mean,
sure.
He got like Kiss back together with the makeup. He's a smart dude, man.
He's also a scumbag, as we said. So
yes,
he had been busted a couple of times for drugs, but he gets busted in like 87 for being part of a smuggling operation to smuggle 20 tons of weed into the United States from Colombia. And again, like weed was illegal then. It's not 2024.
Right, right.
20 tons. So he gets busted and he was looking at almost spending 30 years in jail. This is pretty much, this bust was like pretty much when like we went into Panama, we arrested Noriega. Like Noriega was involved in this like smuggling. This is like a really big drug bust. It's like one of the biggest in the country. And somehow all the other dudes who were involved in this all went to jail except Doc McGee. And he gets out of it by promising. He's like, I promise that I'll put on, I'll start this foundation, and the foundation, we'll call it the Make a Difference Foundation. And we'll put on a show about, you know, anti-drug and alcohol. And somehow the judge agreed to it. And then that's where this led to him doing this show. So it was a plea deal to get him from not spending 30. He was looking at 30 years in jail.
Yeah, crazy. I knew it had something to do with him smuggling. I always wondered if he was smuggling shit through his bands. You know, like, oh, Bon Jovi's all over the world. They can like smuggle shit through their amplifiers. You know, like they have their own fucking jet.
I would be surprised, man. I heard some, I was listening to like a lot of podcasts about all this and some interviews with Doc McGee and stuff like that. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if that was part of it, whether the bands even knew about it or not. Cause right. Cause those guys are touring with these huge groups of people and all this other shit.
They don't know what's going on. They're just hitting the stage every fucking night. And
yeah.
Yeah.
So Doc McGee, like he teamed up with this dude over in Russia, and the guy's name was, I have it in my notes here somewhere, Stas Naaman or Naaman. He was like a Russian dude in a band, but he was also like, Russia wouldn't even let him out of the country. They wouldn't let his band out of the country to tour. Government finally lets him come over here. He's like 35 years old. He comes to the US for like a month and a half, and he's like, dude, we have to bring these rock and roll festivals to Russia. So he kind of ran point from like the Russia side, and Doc McGee was running point in the US. And
right.
Yeah, he calls in all these favors. He gets all these acts that we talked about to all come over. And this is so crazy. They get a friggin' one airplane and they all fly over from the United States. And on the way, they stop in England. They pick up Ozzy and they continue on. And the, we're not supposed to be doing drugs and drinking. That is out the window already on the plane.
Out the fucking window. That was like a quaalude flying through the fucking air.
Right, like in an airplane. Like, there's a problem with the plane. What is it? Oh, it's like a big Tylenol with wings. Right. Yeah, dude. The only band, I think, like Motley Crue was sober.
They were. They just
came out of rehab, but everybody else was not.
They said they got on the plane and everybody start doing their drugs and drinking. They're like, oh my God. We're going to relapse. And then how long is that flight? Like a 16-hour flight?
It's something. Well, probably was stopping in London. Yeah, it probably was. And it was cool because MTV was on the plane with them. So you can go on YouTube and you can see that there's like MTV news clips. Of them.
Adam Curry was there.
Yeah, Adam Curry sitting there with the guys, and you can see that they're having a good time and getting
they're
after
like
it.
Breaking his balls like hardcore. Because like Adam Curry's the least of a headbanger's ball thing. And right. Like they just kept on like making fun of him. He had to go sit up front with Jon Bon Jovi because he was scared of like the Skid Row guys.
Oh, yeah. And Skid Row was kind of like they were like the new band coming out. Like,
they were fucking awesome.
They were awesome, but they were still, they weren't as like seasoned as some of these, you know, like Ozzy was in his 40s by then. Ozzy's like the old head at the time.
Yeah.
But this like, this plane full of these American and British rock and roll guys. And it's important to remember that, I mean, 80s rock and roll, man, is just, it's over the top. It's sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And this plane lands, all these dudes, they said like, customs did, they did, they just walked right through customs. They didn't even have to clear customs.
Oh my god.
Bands were like, well, what if we get arrested for doing all this shit? And they couldn't, because it would cause like an international incident. You can't have all these rock guys come into, like, what do you expect, that they're going to show up all bombed? But they said that when these guys were there, they were like, it was totally like that scene in Rocky IV where he goes training and the KGB is like following him all over. They said like the KGB was like, they bugged their hotel rooms. They followed him whenever they left the hotels just to see what they were up to. Cause this is like, this is scary stuff, I guess, to the Soviet Union and communism.
Ozzy scared the shit out of them.
And MTV News also did some like stuff where they walked around with the bands as they were walking around Moscow.
Yeah, I remember.
It was kind of crappy because like they're talking about like, oh my God, the people here, like the food sucks and they must live such miserable lives. And Ozzy's like at one point he's pretending to shoplift from a store, and Sebastian Bach goes in a subway and he just jumps the turnstile and was like, I'm a rock and roller. I don't care what they say. They're kind of like looking down on everybody. Yeah.
But when I was a kid, it was like, they're like, of course, they're over there doing like that. That's what they're there for. It's like in Woodstock 99, can you get mad at Fred Durst for being Fred Durst?
Right. I absolutely, man. And I don't say that to dunk on everybody, because I think this whole festival is a perfect example of like the power that rock and roll can have on somebody's life.
Sure. I remember seeing the faces, the release that these people were having, live rock and roll music loud in front of them, especially these bands that are like over the top.
Right.
Some of them, they're like, they don't even understand the lyrics or anything like that.
I was thinking about that this week too, right? That a lot of them don't speak English, but they just don't care, because it's like, it's just about how the music makes you feel. And said that by the end, like the Russian, like the Red Army is there to like provide security. And by the end, those guys are like throwing their hats in the air and they're pumping their fists and they're all into it. And I don't know. It's like I just kept making the analogy of like Rocky IV. Like by the end, when they're all cheering, you know, if I can change, you can change. We all can change.
When Bon Jovi came on, they made this aisle of USSR Army troops, and he, like the biggest fucking rock star ever, comes walking down the aisle, and he's got the jacket on, the army jacket, the hat on, like he was hiding in between them all. And he comes walking out and he walks through the crowd. Man, he was the biggest fucking rock star in 1989, bro.
Because they headlined this. They're the big,
absolutely, they did.
But all these other bands were all like main acts in their own right too, right? Like friggin' Ozzy and Motley Crue was like, they were big, but Dr. Feelgood, the album wasn't out yet, so they're not like super superstars yet. Yeah. But they're on their way. But Ozzy is friggin' Ozzy.
See, I think that the government got behind Bon Jovi and gave away like records of Bon Jovi, like the New Jersey album that was out at that time, like really pushed shit out of Bon Jovi.
They're a little more like wholesome than like, exactly, Ozzy and Crew and stuff like that. And
exactly.
Yeah. I read this whole thing about like around the American government wanted to bring rock and roll into Russia. And it was like trying to figure out what were the right acts to do that. And then of course, like this whole, you know, Doc McKee gets arrested and he calls in all of his favors of all of his buddies and shit like that. But
I always thought Bon Jovi basically was the biggest band in the world there, but they always kept their politics to themselves. So there was no politics going on in any of the music. Like, mostly Bon Jovi songs are about hope. And I don't know. I could just see a whole group of people getting behind something positive that the New Jersey album was.
Sure. Yeah. And they were coming off the road, I think, from the, like, they came off the road from the New Jersey tour right before this festival. So they were riding high.
They were like, dude,
riding high in popularity.
Holy shit, dude. They were, I'm saying it again, I guess because they were my favorite band in 89. Dude, there was no one fucking bigger than them on MTV and during the Bad Medicine days or the I'll Be There For You. You know, holy shit, they were so fucking big. And I seen them on that tour. And it was fucking magical. The New Jersey tour, holy shit. It had the staircase through the crowd. It changed my fucking life, man.
Right, and that's cool because you had to have been like 13 years old going to see them. Yeah,
I was.
That's awesome.
It was. It changed my whole fucking life. You know, and Skid Row opened up for them, and holy shit, what's better than Sebastian Bach when you're 13 years old?
Right.
You know.
They so real quick before we'll start playing some of the music, but it was like there was a big thing around like Bon Jovi closing this. Like, much like, you know, so these rock and rollers come over with all of their excess and all this shit, and also comes with it the egos and everything else. And there's a lot of like arguing backstage on like who's going last. And everyone's like, okay, this is Bon Jovi's show. And then initially, like, Ozzy was supposed to come on before Motley Crue, and he was like, come on, man, I'm Ozzy Osbourne. Like, he was pissed, and he was like, I'm not doing this. I'll get on the friggin' plane and go home. And I guess the story I read was Bon Jovi was like, hey, man, like, if you want to close the show, go ahead. You can have my spot. You can have our spot. Which is weird because Ozzy and like Motley Crue like toured together before this. But
he's
anyway.
He's right, though.
I agree.
Ozzy. He's Black right. Sabbath.
Right. I mean, I agree. He,
you know, fuck.
So then he So the way they worked it was like Motley Crue went on before Ozzy, but then it was like when it was broadcasted, they edited the tape so it looked like Ozzy went on before Motley Crue. So it was like they split the difference. But then the other shit that happens, man, is like Doc McGee tells everybody you can't have pyrotechnics, you can't be blowing shit up, and yeah, that was like a huge part of like rock shows.
Yep. Oh yeah, I know this story.
Yeah, and Motley Crue is like, man, it's still part of their show. And Bon Jovi gets up, Bon Jovi closes the show, and there's fireworks and there's pyrotechnics.
And it's fucking bigger than life, bro. It's right. Fucking bigger than life.
You got the build up.
They're like, what the fuck?
Right, you get the build up of all these acts coming, and the Russian people start chanting, and even the soldiers are cheering, and all the pyrotechnics are going off, and Motley Crue, even though they were supposed to be sober, they were like, what the F? And they said that Tommy Lee just like grabbed a bottle of vodka out of somebody's hand and like shotgunned it. And he was so, and then he just walks up to Doc McGee.
He punched Doc McGee in the back. And yep. They were like, during the jam session, Tommy Lee's supposed to be playing in the jam session. His drums are set up and you can hear Vince Neil's like, where's Tommy?
Yeah.
You're like, fuck him. Let's go.
Yeah, Tommy Lee just walked out and or walked up to Doc McGee, just punched him, and then he refused to fly home. They took a different flight home, and they fired him. They fired Doc McGee over this. But it's like a legendary. Even like Rolling Stone has like an oral history of this, and they interviewed like all these different. You know, they interviewed like Ozzy and Zakk Wylde, and it was like, and they interviewed Tommy Lee. It was just his whole story was like, did Doc McGee tell you the story when I punched him in the effing face or something like that? It was like his whole remembrance of it.
Well, you know, don't fucking lie to the crew.
That's true. Oh, and then there's one more thing we should, before we start playing the tunes, man. So in addition to their set, each band only plays like, Ozzy plays 10 songs. They're up probably like 45 minutes, an hour, maybe each.
Bon Jovi plays for an hour and a half.
Yeah. In addition to, yeah, Bon Jovi plays 11 songs, but each one of the bands, also one of the songs that they played, they each played a cover, and it was a cover of what you were saying. It was like somebody that it was a cover of an artist that had like a drug or alcohol
and passed away from it.
Yeah.
It was called Stairway to Heaven, Highway to Hell.
Yeah. And they put an album out. You can still find the CD on like Amazon, but it's not.
I
on,
have
like,
it.
Oh,
I
do
have
you really?
It. I actually, it's my copy from when I was a kid. I still have it.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's not on the streaming platforms, but we do have all the covers, and we'll play those too. That's why when we opened, that was Skid Row playing Holidays in the Sun by the Sex Pistols.
See, they opened the whole festival, and they opened up with that tune. And
yes.
It's this fucking killer stage that Peter Max designed, the whole stage. If you don't know who Peter Max is the artist who did all the, psychedelic posters and shit back in the 60s and stuff like that. And all these stars on it, and it's a rotating stage. So you just hear like Sebastian Bach, like, "Are you ready, motherfucker?" Like, like,
that's awesome.
It's unreal. It's the most rock and roll thing you'll ever see.
Yeah, they just sound great too. You know, maybe the way we work this, we'll play a little clip of each one of the songs, the covers, and we can play a clip of something that they actually played. But here's them playing "Youth Gone Wild," and this is what they closed their set with. Yeah, it's super cool too.
So fuck. I don't care how old I get. I will always be the Youth Gone Wild, brother.
Right. And it's like they're playing that in Soviet Russia. Right. That's like, I mean, that is an anthem of defiance and rebellion. And even they're showing some of the people in the crowd, and they're waving like big American flags and shit like that. Just very cool.
Skid Row is one of my favorite bands from that era, man. I love Sebastian Bach as a kid, and I will never talk bad on him because he's a violent guy, and we may come across him sometime. But I love Skid Row. I love the band more than Sebastian Bach. Snake Sabo is the man. Great guitar player. Rachel Bolton, great bass player. You know, Rob Affuso is a great drummer.
They put out a couple albums that just kicked ass.
Oh, yeah. Fucking Slave to the Grind is killer.
Yep.
And they put another one out that didn't get a lot of play. It was called Subhuman Race.
Yeah, they stuck around like a little bit longer than some of the other hair bands, like being relevant.
They got really heavy towards the end, like Pantera heavy.
And he does a lot of shit with like VH1 and, he's always got something to say about music commentary and stuff. He's an interesting dude. I've heard that he's not the nicest person in the world.
No, he's kind of a dick.
Yeah, but he's I always find it interesting hearing what he has to say. So they set the stage, man, for this whole weekend, and the crowd is going bonkers. And then Gorky Park, they come up next, and they're a Russian band.
They are.
Gorky Park is a park in Moscow. I didn't know much about them, but I did go and look up some of their songs, and here I'll play their regular song.
Yeah, I'll play the regular song. Bang Bang.
Yeah, I think that's what I have. Here you go. Yeah, that was it. Here you go. Yeah, okay.
They were this big band in Russia, though, man. They were like Doc McGee's like band that he had in Russia that he brought onto this thing.
Yeah, you know? And it is cool that there's a couple like Russian acts that are involved in this, too. It's not all just Western music.
Yeah.
And then the cover that they did, they covered My Generation by The Who. And you can play a little bit version. It is cool. That's cool. I like that.
Yeah, man. They bring it. For a band that doesn't speak English per se, you know, like that song is so recognizable. You know what it is, no matter what language.
And they made it their own too. That sounds different than the Who version, but they even, yeah. I mean, that's a punk theme kind of song, right? Talk about my generation, and they're getting up in front of all these people in Russia and they're singing it. It's super cool. The other Russian band that performs is a group called Nuance, and they didn't do a cover, but they were like a weird, like avant-garde instrumental guitar. I got a song from them. I don't even know what it's called because the YouTube clip is actually in Russian.
Almost like a jam band.
Yeah, he's holding the guitar like almost like a pedal steel, like in his lap, and he's playing it just like funky. It's almost, it reminded me of like Ravi Shankar playing it.
I don't even remember this band being even on the special or anything.
They're not. It's interesting because even the YouTube clip is all in the Russian alphabet, like Cyrillic or whatever that alphabet is called, and I just translated it. It doesn't even have a song title. It just says Nuance at the festival, but they're the two Russian acts that play.
Rookie Park, I totally remember that band. I do not remember.
Yeah, I don't. I had never heard of them before this, so, and probably will never listen to them ever again. Cinderella comes out next, man, and Cinderella just
a great band.
They really are, and I've said this like three times on the show that I used to make fun of them so much, and that Tom Kiefer used to come into the Sam Goody we worked in all the time, and I'd bust his balls because he would put all the Cinderella albums on the fronts of the rack, and I was like, oh, has been. They're great, and I really should have paid attention to them more when I was really into all this music as a kid.
I loved them growing up. That first album, Night Songs, great fucking record, man. Long Cold Winter, great record.
You said before, like, they're more of a blues band than a glam hair band.
And they are from Philadelphia.
That's true. I got Somebody Save Me.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
They're just trying to kick the hell out of all those people that are there with that.
They do. Oh, yeah, I've seen them a bunch of times and they're just fucking great. I saw them 1 year open up for David Lee Roth and they blew them off the fucking stage.
Awesome. They're great in this concert too, because they're all lined, the guitar players are all lined up together, like moving back and forth in sync. Oh, yeah. And just, they're all in their 80s clothes. So they've got the jackets with the huge sleeves and shit.
Everything's
like that,
glitter. So. What did they do on that record? They did a Janis Joplin song, didn't they?
Yeah. They covered Move Over by Janis.
They kill it, dude.
Hey, he's got a pretty good voice to do a Janis Joplin song too. But yeah, let's check this out. That kicks ass.
Oh, yeah. I always loved that. Ever since I was a kid, I knew that version way before I knew the Janis version.
The Janis version? Yeah. That makes sense if you grew up listening to all that kind of music, too.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff, some of these, the covers are studio versions, obviously, that they put on the album. You know, the Skid Row song we played was from the festival, but some of these, that's obviously a studio cut of the Cinderella thing we just played. But yeah, I feel like they don't get, Cinderella doesn't get the props.
No, they not at all, man. I mean, and there were way bigger bands than Cinderella. Like, it's just, they didn't survive the meltdown. Or even the rebuilding of hair metal that we've had in the last 10 years. You know, you see him around, but you never see Cinderella around. That Jeff Lombard died. Not Jeff Lombard. Jeff, their guitar player, passed away a couple of years ago.
Tom Kiefer had a whole bunch of like health issues, right? He had some problems with his throat. We've talked about him a couple times in a couple of the hair band episodes. But there's always like that bucket of bands that like Beavis and Butthead would make fun of, like hair bands. Yeah. Like, you know, the kid that had like Winger. And it was like more times than not, Cinderella gets thrown in that bucket. I don't know, man. I just have a newfound appreciation for their music.
Like I said, they're a blues band. That first album is way glam. I don't give a fuck what anybody says. But the later records were all kind of real bluesy.
And you said they didn't survive the meltdown. And due to all the other issues that they've got going on, they didn't ride the wave back up the resurgence. It would be cool to see them on the road with Poison or one of those bands. But
yeah. You know.
But alas, it is not to be. And then Motley comes out.
I don't understand why they didn't play anything off the Dr. Feelgood fucking, because it would have been like, here comes the new fucking songs before.
It's, yeah.
You know, like it came out, played Kickstart My Heart easily.
It came out like that year, a couple months later.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. So I put Shout of the Devil on here because I just thought that would be appropriate. Like, again, they're in the Soviet Union and that's like, yeah, that song was getting attention in the United States when they were singing it, let alone Soviet Russia. Man, he cannot hit those notes anymore.
Even in 1989, he could barely hit them. Now it's a fucking joke. The whole band just fucking went downhill. Like, Tommy Lee is playing drums, but there's a backup drum track playing along with him. It's real dumb. And Nikki Sixx is playing to a fucking track also. So the only people that are really up there is Vince with the three backup singers and the Johnny Cool Guitar, whoever the fuck they have now.
Right. 25. Yeah. Because Mick Mars is out and they're all fighting over money and suing each other now. I think so. I'm watching it on YouTube as it's playing. I think the drum head that he's playing, like on the bass drum, is the Dr. Feelgood logo on it. It just like it pans across it. And then I guess at the end of this, like Nikki Sixx is so pissed off. Well, with like their set time and where they were playing and everything else. And Nikki Sixx like smashes his bass guitar on the ground.
Starts smashing everything.
Yeah. In an interview I was reading with somebody who was like over, like Russian, like a Russian musician. He was like, dude, if you're a musician in Russia and Soviet Union in the 80s, like you can't buy like guitar strings. Right. Because like, he's like, so he looked like a real jackass, like smashing these instruments that these people like can't have.
He could have just gave them away.
Right. He's like, throw it in the crowd or something. You're like wrecking all these instruments. These people are like, you know how hard it is? Like sometimes I was reading about like guys would be playing bass and they would only have like three strings because they couldn't find other ones to put on the on the guitar. So yeah, I didn't really thought of that before.
I never thought about that either. He like pulls the drum set down and fucking it's a nightmare at the end.
Then they cover Jailhouse Rock.
A little Jailhouse Rock for you today. Gone to a party in a county jail. Gonna mess around, gonna see the way. Gone on a trip, out of sleep. To the head, out of jail,
man, they sound awful.
It's just going to be like, oh man, Motley Crue covering Elvis. That sounds kind of cool. It's like, it was way too fast.
That is on the Girls album. I believe they covered it. And it's the last song on the Girls album.
And Ozzy comes up next. You know, I said Ozzy's playing with Zakk Wylde.
Randy Castillo.
He plays. Butler. I did think I saw Geezer Butler when I was watching this.
Yep.
He plays some of his stuff. He plays some some Sabbath stuff. He plays War Pigs and Crazy Train and Paranoid. He plays a whole bunch of stuff. I want to play a little bit of Shot in the Dark, though. Check this out. He's a wild man even then.
He sounds great.
He does sound good. Zakk Wylde's going crazy doing his thing. You know, he's awesome. He's a great guitar player, though.
Yeah. That whole band was killer.
Geezer's got like the 80s mustache and the big hair. Just awesome. You know, he looks awesome, too. And then the song that they played, I don't think they played it at the show, but the one that goes on the album, he covers Purple Haze from Hendrix. Great. Yeah, it's very cool. It sounds great.
Yeah, he's the fucking, what do they call him? The Prince of Darkness?
The Prince of Darkness, man.
Yes. Hell yeah.
I was just thinking of this too, man. Like, when I threw away all my CDs when I moved out of Philadelphia, and I had like 1,200 CDs, I got rid of them all. There's just like, there's cool stuff that, like, this album isn't on any of the streaming services. So it's like, you know, like you still have a copy of it. But it's like, thankfully, somebody uploaded it on YouTube, but it's like there's this stuff out there that
it's gone forever.
Right, it's just gone forever, and that sucks. In hindsight, I shouldn't have thrown everything away, but I just didn't have the real estate in my house for everything. And I mean, I put a bunch of shit on my computer, but I'm like, when the hell the last time I opened like iTunes was on my computer?
For real?
And it's probably been years. Like all the bootlegs I had on there, and but anyway. Grumpy old man. Technology. All right.
Songs.
Back in the day, we had to like physically hold our music.
We had midnight sales, damn it.
Right. Sleeping in parking lots to get tickets and waiting for CDs to come out and stuff like that. But the Scorpions, and I got some stuff on them at the end of the show, but the Scorpions come out. They're the only band from the West that had played in Russia before this, and they're a German band, and they had a bunch of hits. I don't like them very much.
Yeah, I don't dislike them, but I never had any of their records. I would change a channel when they come on MTV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. So let's play a little bit of Big City Nights from this show. Yeah, they don't do anything for me, but I know you said before, like, they played, like, countries, like, how big they were in
Europe. They're on Stamps in Germany. You know, Germany's Bruce Springsteen, you know?
And they played, like, a Russian folk song, which I thought was kind of cool. Like they're, you know, we don't need to play it, but it was just kind of cool. Like they're not giving a nod to like the music history of Russia. And then they covered I Can't Explain by The Who.
Voice is killer though, man.
It is. It doesn't do anything for me.
Sure. You remind me of Spinal Tap.
Yeah, I could see that. They look like some of the guys in Spinal Tap watching the video of them performing too. But yeah, they never really did anything for me. We'll get to Wind of Change at the end.
But they were a big deal playing that because they knew who the Scorpions were. You know,
you said they were the only band out of these other than the Russian bands who had actually even played in Russia before. So it is cool that they were involved in all of this.
I think the Scorpions headlined it one night. Like the first night. Yeah,
that would make sense. And then Bon Jovi, man.
Let's play the song that they did on the record first.
OK.
Boys Are Back in Town.
Yes.
Great version of Thin Lizzy song.
It's pretty kick-ass. Yeah, it's good.
Shit out of it. It's very sad to say, but that was the first version of that song I've ever heard.
Okay, that's all right.
And they actually played it in the Navy SEALs movie, too.
Wasn't it in A Knight's Tale, too? I think I've heard it in some other movie as well, but that does kick-ass. I love the Thin Lizzy version, but that version kicks-ass, too.
Yeah, they do a great... During the concert, is there Blood on Blood on there?
There is.
Because he starts talking. He starts doing like the Springsteen talking thing. Let's play that.
I can still remember when I was just a kid. We friends were friends forever. And what you said is what you did. Well, we met in Bobby. Put each other's hands. We'll tattoo a promise. All our brothers understand. We will say I know. What you really
know. That's cool.
How fucking amazing is that footage, though?
Yeah.
Like, dude, he takes that whole stadium and just fucks and put it in the palm of his hand. God, they gotta get Richie Sambora back in the band, dude.
From what I heard, man, it's going to happen this summer. Maybe we should take a break. I've got a couple songs that like they played in like a jam, like they all, and then all these guys come out and they like jam together. There's a couple of those songs. And then we can talk about the song that Scorpions right after this that, you know, became a huge, like one of their biggest hits. And then we'll wrap up.
All right, everyone, stick around.
Sounds good.
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by McCusker's Tavern at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia. There's something for everyone on the beer list and the jukebox in McCusker's. It's minutes from the sports stadiums in Philly, making it a great place to stop by for a few drinks before or after a concert or a game. Come see for yourself why everyone from Philadelphia Magazine to Playboy has called it one of the best dive bars in the city. Visit them at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia or on Facebook. That's McCusker's Tavern.
Let's talk Factor Meals for just a second. Steph, you know that I take care of Dad and cook for him nightly, and Factor Meals saved me this week. I mean, big time. Normally, he's a really picky eater, but this was a winner.
Yes, your dad has a gourmet palate, and these Factor Meals are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, pre-prepared meals that are delivered to your door, and they're ready to heat and eat whenever you are.
And Factor Meals has a lot of options for the fancy palate as my dad's is, and for those with dietary needs as well. 35 different options to be precise, ranging from keto to calorie smart to vegan and veggie too.
In minutes, you will have a delicious meal that is full of flavor, as your father did. And the spices these chefs use are incredible. So not only is it convenient and nutritious, there are also some proper gourmet elements involved in Factor meals.
Yeah, restaurant quality, feel good meals. Gotta love them.
Yep, Factor Meals is less expensive than takeout, and it's also healthier. What's not to like about that? So head to factormeals.com, Metallica50, and use code Metallica50. You will then get 50% off.
That's right. The code is Metallica50 at factormeals.com, Metallica50, to get 50% off.
All right, we're back from the commercial break. Thanks so much for sticking with us. Just a reminder, the Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by Boldfoot Socks and McCusker's Tavern. So that was Moby Dick by Zeppelin. You said that was all like the drummers from who? You said it was what?
It was Tico Torres from Bon Jovi, Tommy Lee from Motley Crue, and Jason Bonham, who wasn't in a band yet, but Doc was managing him at the time. And he brought him out for the jam session.
Yeah.
You know, so they put them on the record.
That's cool. Yeah, that was cool. I dig that. They played.
That was a big deal to me growing up. Like that track.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you're a drummer too. So
even before I even knew how to play the drums, I was like visualizing like what the fuck he was doing or what they all were doing. Cause you get further in the song and the techniques just fucking come out. Like, oh my God, that's Tommy Lee right there. Holy shit. That's Tico Torres right there. Like I can pick awesome. It out.
Right on. Yeah, they come out and they play four songs. They play they do Hound Dog, they do Long Tall Sally and Blue Suede Shoes, they do Rock and Roll, and then they do Give Peace a Chance, which I don't know about that one, but
yeah, I don't remember them doing Give Peace. We're gonna skip that.
Yeah.
That just sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll play a little bit of Hound Dog. See if it hopefully it's better than Jailhouse Rock was, Molly. All right, that's awesome. I like that.
Yeah, you see those guys all jammed together. They're all doing the duck walk and shit.
Yeah, that's cool. Play a little bit of Long Tall why the fuck can I say that?
Long Tall Sally, brother.
Long Tall Sally, and it goes right into Blue Suede Shoes. That's cool.
Rockin', baby.
Yeah, that's the Scorpions, Gorky Park, and David Bryan from Bon Jovi doing that.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it was cool. And they're playing like classic American rock and roll. So I think that's it, man. I think that's the Moscow Peace Festival. One thing that comes out after this was the Scorpions were moved by everything that they saw and being in town for this event. And they wrote the song Wind of Change. And, you know, they're a German band, but they sing it in English. And that song really becomes like an anthem for the end of the Cold War. Like, and they're playing it like everywhere when the Berlin Wall came down.
It was huge.
Yeah. It's one of the biggest.
It was huge.
It's one of the biggest selling singles at the time, like in history. and it was an enormous hit in Europe.
What year was that?
1990. So they wrote it a little bit after. It comes out on the album Crazy World in 1990. And it was released as a single in 1991. I went so far down the friggin' rabbit hole with this that I listened to, like, there's a podcast called Wind of Change. And it was like a reporter who was making the argument that that song, that the Scorpions didn't write that, that the CIA secretly wrote that song to as propaganda to help get people in, like, Eastern Europe to want a revolution to help bring down communism in the Cold War. The guy interviewed like Doc McGee, and he was interviewing all these like musicians and CIA people. I don't think I agreed with it, but it was, I was like, what the hell did I just step into with this? And it was, it was interesting that they said that the singer for the Scorpions didn't really write a lot of the songs, and they like, he wrote this allegedly. And they're like, and it's so different than some other stuff that maybe the CIA wrote it for them. But they said the Scorpions say that's total not true. And Doc McGee said it's not true, but interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Thought that was cool. But I hate that song. I do not like that song at all. But I also understand like how important it is to like history and culturally and everything else. I just never liked it. I didn't like it when it came out.
Well, I'm going to make you play it.
Listening to the wind of change.
Yeah. It's peace and love.
Yeah.
You know.
They're like they've sold over 100 million albums, and you said they're on stamps in Germany. They are one of the best selling hard rock bands in the world of all time.
Dude, some of their album covers were fucking weird, man.
They're German. What do you expect? But that line, like, I follow the Moskova down to Gorky Park. The Moskova is like the river in Russia that goes through Moscow. And they said like all these bands, like during this concert or the week they spent in Russia, they got on like a boat cruise and they went down the river. So it's like, you know, and he could tell that things were going to change soon with the Berlin Wall and everything else. But,
well, you know, they're letting these bands play. It's a first step.
Sure. You know? Sure. Yeah. Culturally historically, it's an important song in the big story of rock and roll. I just don't like it, but hey,
it was just played out, man. It was fucking everywhere.
Yeah. That's true. Like every montage they would show of people tearing down the wall, it was either that or that Jesus Jones song, Right Here, Right Now. That was like the other one that they played all the time when the Berlin Wall was coming down. That was a cool song.
Yeah.
So I think that's the Moscow Peace Festival, man.
Yeah, I love it, and I'm glad we did a show about it.
Yeah, dude, I'm glad you brought it up, because I said I don't remember this at all, so I am not real good at my early hair metal history.
And it gives us another opportunity to talk about hair metal.
Absolutely. It's like the fourth episode we've done about it.
We'll keep them coming with angles.
Yeah, of course. We'll talk about it for eternity. All right, let's get to the back end of the show. I got a bunch of music news. I've got three stories from music news today. The first one, Morgan Wallen, the country star, was arrested over the weekend. So country star Morgan Wallen, his album last year, the album he came out with last year, One Thing at a Time, spent 19 weeks at number one. He was arrested over the weekend for throwing a chair off of the top floor roof of a 6-story bar on Broadway in Nashville. So he got... I guess he had too much to drink, and he threw a chair off of the roof. He was in Eric Church's bar Chiefs, and the chair landed down on Broadway and almost hit two police officers. So, yeah.
What does he think? He's the Who or something?
Yeah, right. It's not the first time he's been arrested. In 2020, he was arrested outside of Kid Rock's big-ass honky-tonk and rock and roll steakhouse on Broadway for getting thrown out for being a drunk jackass. He was, like, breaking glasses and starting fights with people out on the street. So He's a bad load. He's a bad drunk. He's a somebody you wouldn't want in McCusker's.
Who is he? Who is he?
Morgan Wallen. He's a really big country singer.
Sounds like a douchebag.
Yeah, he got in trouble a couple of years ago too for it was a video of him using the N-word. And here, I'll play a little bit of one of his songs.
With your fingertips, last bottle of Jack, we split a fifth. Just talking about life, going sip for sip. Yeah, you know you love to fight, and I say shit I don't mean.
Fuck that song. What the fuck was that? That was like fucking rap country. He's like fucking hip hop country. Get the fuck out of here. It's like Beyonce making a fucking country album. Dude, what the fuck was that? That was not country music, brother. What the fuck is going on?
The patented line now. We could have a whole thing on like modern country music because there's too much like drum machine in a lot of modern country, and I don't really understand why.
I've been calling it Bon Jovi country for a long time.
You have, and I use that all the time now when I talk about it. But anyway, second, the lead singer for the band Firehouse, CJ Snare, he passed away over the weekend.
No way.
In September 2020, he was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer, but he was hoping to recover and get back out on the road. But he had some sort of abdominal procedure done, and he had a heart attack. He just had cardiac arrest afterward. So he wasn't that old. I think he was like in his mid-60s.
Bad, don't treat me bad.
Yeah, dude. Oh, here. This is a great, I love this song, too.
Yeah.
That song was hooky as hell. Yeah.
And then they had the other song that was like everybody's prom theme.
Love of a Lifetime. Yes.
Yeah. We don't have to play that, please.
No. The album cover is so cheesy, too. It's like the girl with her boobs hanging out and she's holding like a match and the house is on fire.
I had it on cassette.
I did, too.
Yeah. Fuck yeah, you did.
Yeah, of course. right. I threw away all my CDs. I still have that. I don't have a cassette player, but I still have it. And then the last thing I had was they're making a Springsteen movie about the making of Nebraska. So Jeremy Allen White has signed on to play Bruce Springsteen in a movie called Deliver Me From Nowhere about the making of Nebraska. Springsteen and his manager, John Landau, are reportedly involved in the project. And Landau said that the book Deliver Me From Nowhere is one of the best Springsteen books ever written. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go find that and I'm going to read it. And I'm hoping that this will mean we'll finally get to hear the mythical, rumored electric version of Nebraska, because there was always the rumor that he got the whole E Street Band together. They recorded the entire album and he hated it and he's never released it. And I think it was Max Weinberg said that, yes, it actually does exist. So I'm hoping that it's going to come with the movie.
God, that would be like a whole other way of listening to that record.
Absolutely.
I can't hear Johnny 99 electric and drums. Maybe I can, but
he plays it live sometimes with the whole band kicking behind. And speaking of that too, he's back on the road.
Yes.
And he seems to be kicking ass. I saw he just did like a 3-hour and 40-minute show, and it seems like he's mixing up the set list again. He's like doing the sign request. So it seems like he's feeling better and he's back to kicking ass. And I know we'll be seeing him this summer. So I'm looking forward to that.
Can't wait, dude.
Yeah, me neither. Nice to see. Because last year he was doing like the same set list and he was only playing for an hour and a half. And that's just not the expectations we have for him. Okay, second thoughts. I got 2 second thoughts, man, and they're fantastic. The first one was an email from Tom W., who said, are you guys seriously selling pictures of the warden for charity? Can we order them online? Where are they? More warden. I don't know if that's actually the warden emailed us, but you know, we're working on it. So
I have a spot ready for McCusker's.
And then we got this comment on YouTube from James 243664. I was listening to you talk about Hulkster in heaven while driving. I started laughing so hard that I spit out my coffee. I don't believe that the story behind the song is made up. So I looked up the album and I played it at 11, brother. Then I started bench pressing galaxies and curling continents so much that I tore a hole in space and time itself. The universe was no match for the Hulksterian power, brother. I climbed up the turnbuckle so high that I was able to jump up into the clouds. And there I saw that little Hulkster waving his angel wings, playing the Hulkamaniac theme on his little harp. We both trained, prayed, and vitamized ourselves for a few minutes before I jumped off the cloud all the way back down to Earth, brother. I did a big leg drop right on Sergeant Slaughter. So what you gonna do? Okay.
I love it. Thanks for listening, dude.
Right, I appreciate the times. The Electric Chair. I was going to kill Wild Wild West by Will Smith because that song is fucking awful.
God, that movie's even worse.
Yeah, Will Smith put out a lot of really good music. Yeah, you know, get it playing.
Yeah, getting jiggy with it.
I didn't even know there was like a speaking intro to it, but yeah, man, Will Smith was like, he put out so much great stuff, and then this is at that end when like hip hop and R&B music gets really lame, and this song stinks. The movie is friggin' not good.
Awful, awful movie.
Yeah,
yeah,
and yeah,
Will Smith just like jumped the shark after a while. After the Men in Black, he had a hit with the Getting Jiggy with It. He said, "I can make another hit for another movie. Watch." And he did the Wild Wild West. This ain't no Kool Moe Dee Wild Wild West.
Kool Moe Dee is on this song, though, somewhere in it.
Is he?
Yeah. I think that might be him doing the deep voice in the background, the bass. Drew Hill is on it. Drew Hill sucks, too. That's Drew Hill singing the little soul hook right there. Yeah, dude, this was just not good. This is a bad song for a good artist.
All right, we'll kill this song.
All right, let's get that all out of here.
We sentence you to death.
Okay, now play Kool Moe Dee Wild Wild West.
Yeah, this is much better.
Everything's upbeat, parties, ball in the park, nothing but girls at the dark, we chill, nobody gets ill in the place.
Somehow we missed that.
Saying, why not?
Yeah, we did the golden age of hip-hop. We missed that somehow.
But Wild Wild West, Kool Moe Dee was the man.
The Wild Wild Warden.
Nah.
And I give him any more idea. We already have his theme song, and I still had to clip that out. That, ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Wait until he goes to Vegas, baby.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm just going to spin around and let him go.
You're going to need he's going to need
I'm going to give him dollar bills in his hand and like spin him around like a pin the tail of a donkey.
go forth in that direction. Three shots of Jack Daniels, spin him around in the intersection. Say, this is the direction. We'll get him on the zip line that goes down the street.
Whee!
Oh, shit. Oh, all right. So that'll do it for episode 82 in the Moscow Peace Festival.
It's gonna be so fucked up when we get them down there. We're just going to make a drink.
Probably just not going to come home. None of the music we played in this episode is on the streaming services, not even the album that they released. But the whole show is on YouTube and it's worth checking out. Just for anything else, man, to go see the reaction of the crowd. There's also clips on of MTV News behind the scenes. Go check out all the stuff. It's really cool. And be sure to go check out the show notes for this episode for links to our website at www.prisonersofrockandroll.com. Our email address is show@prisonersofrockandroll.com. Our Facebook and Twitter accounts and a map to McCusker's Tavern in Philadelphia. And if you want to follow that map, you can come down to McCusker's Tavern on May 4th because Ryan's band High Street Records is going to be there and they're going to bring the house down.
Oh, I can't wait, dude. We got rehearsal tomorrow. We got the shit going on, boy. I'll tell you.
Awesome. All right, dude. So we'll circle up. Figure out what we're going to talk about next and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Keep on rocking.
Peace out.
I'm just a prisoner.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.